Hey guys, and welcome back to the Building Financial Fitness podcast. And we have Chris Ng back with us again.
Hello again.
Everybody. Today I wanted to talk to you about something, you know, a video that has been quite talked about.
Okay.
On TikTok.
Right.
It's basically about Gen Z's crying at being laid off.
Okay.
And I wanted to link that to, you know, what you talk about toxicism in the workplace.
Okay.
So I'll set some context here, right? I think that video was this lady, I think Brittany Peach, where she basically recorded the video of her being laid off.
All right.
And she laid out a couple of things, right? She's like, I'm going to stop you there. I actually had a lot of activity. I don't understand why I'm being laid off.
Right.
And then the HR guy's response was, you know, this is not a personal thing. You know, we're laying off a whole bunch of other people as well. And the internet kind of rose up, right? There are a lot of people who supported that.
Okay.
There's also a lot of people who felt that, you know, this is like me, not the right way to do things. And I think that even just yesterday, I sent you, I think Bloomberg put out an IG post where it's gotten to the extent where companies are so afraid of now laying off Gen Zs because they're so scared of being shamed on social media.
Okay. All right.
And then you put out, I think you talked about toxicism in workplace. So I wanted to get, like, what's your perspective on this?
Okay. Let's look at this problem from a very structured perspective, right? What is the background behind the layoffs? During the pandemic, there was a war for talent.
Yeah.
And a lot of these tech companies overemployed their staff, right? Mm. So there was this huge fight for software engineers and there was a price war. And they find that they have too many people in their companies, right? And then they're suddenly hit by the LLM models, the ChatGPTs, and they find that using these platforms, a software engineer could increase his productivity by maybe 25 to 50%, right? Which means that you have an excess headcount within your company.
Mm.
And I think prior to this, IBM was very wise. They froze their headcount. They didn't retrench anybody. They froze their headcount. So they didn't get this negative publicity.
Mm.
But the companies that over hired would have to get rid of some of their staff.
Yeah.
All right. So HR isn't wrong when they say that it has nothing to do with the individual that's affected.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, on the other hand, we want to figure out why Gen Z is angry. Right. We then look at what sociologists say that's special about Gen Z. And Gen Z isn't anything new. Gen Z is just a continuation of Gen X, my generation, continuation of Gen Y, and then now you have Gen Z. And what are the major trends? I think the most important major trend to discuss this issue is the trend of individuality.
Mm-hmm.
As you move from generation to generation, people have become more individualistic and less communal.
Mm.
There are some families that don't even celebrate Chinese New Year, right? Despite being ethnically Chinese.
Yeah.
Right. And that's a new trend in Singapore. And we're reading about it in the newspapers today. So if you're individual, I mean, it's like you're just getting rid of me. Obviously, I'm upset, right? And I'm not really looking at the big picture and I want to rail about it, right? But Gen Z in particular is very good at activism. They're very good at getting fellow Gen Z to fight over something on social media. They have the tools to do it and they have the technical sophistication to do it, right? Which is what we are seeing right now. And I think from a perspective of someone who's reached financial freedom, I would say that what do you expect Gen Z to do? Every successive generation of Americans are saddled with study loans. That's not something you see in Singapore. So you can't really contextualize and say that Singapore Gen Z is the same as these people. I don't think our Gen Z are like that, right?
Mm.
Because for them, they could be dealing with study loans and they're not going to be loan-free until maybe their mid-30s or their early 40s, which is you're in a really bad position.
Yeah.
So naturally, there is that sense that they are being screwed, okay? And I guess that's what they have to do. They have to band together. They have to fight these companies. And these companies would then have to adjust accordingly. Maybe these companies would need to be more deliberate with their hiring decisions in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to look into new markets. Like, I don't believe the Gen Z of India would be so difficult to work with, right? So it's now everything's globalization. So they might have to like find work and hire from different countries where people are less prone to this form of activism. Yeah, but I don't see something that we can do about it. I would actually think that that's actually a good thing. You're making the workplace a better place.
Mm-hmm.
And Singaporeans will benefit from this because Singaporeans who work in an American multinational, for example, would be able to benefit from these workplace changes that come from the activism in the US.
Mm.
And they would be able to experience maybe more flexibility on the day job, and more importantly, managers who at least pretend to be more empathetic. And I think that's not a bad thing. We spend one third of our lifetimes at work, and if you can't make that experience pleasant, right? In my generation, nobody made the experience pleasant. If you are unhappy, they might throw more money at you, but they'll never make you feel better, right?
Yeah. So, but I think there are a few things in play here, right? Just maybe from just specifically that Cloudflare incident, just taking that as a case study. Because I think there was something that she said where she said that I had a lot of activity.
Right.
And the immediate response to that, especially coming from the older generation, is that just because there's a lot of activity, it doesn't mean that you're effective.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she was actually, I believe in like a sales role, like a BD, something like that, and sometimes even remote work. So I think that was one lesson to take away from it, where it's important to differentiate activity versus actually being productive.
Yeah.
And I think that is actually a good message across all generations, right?
Okay, but we need to be fair to her, right? Mm. If she's doing a lot of activities and she's not being productive, her manager should take part of the blame as well, because they should sort of manage her time, right? In fact, if you manage it well, you wouldn't come to a situation where you need to let her go. Yeah, so I would not totally lay the blame on her.
Mm-hmm.
And if she's Gen Z, she doesn't have a lot of working experience. How do you differentiate between work that is productive and work that is not? And I would be the first to say that my generation was highly unproductive. It was highly unproductive. We didn't have tools like Slack to keep in contact with each other. In fact, our time management tools were absolutely medieval.
Yeah.
Right? Sometimes when I'm clocking my time, I would say that I spend an hour clocking my time just to troll the time tracking systems. Right? Yeah. So, yeah, I think the management needs to take ownership for that. And I think the only sad thing is that if she had excess time, she should not have invested it in the company. Yeah, she should have been investing it in maybe like a hidden moonlighting contract with another company. Yeah, that would have been a lot more productive. And sort of proves my idea that you should always try to have multiple gigs and be overemployed, because this is what's going to happen to a lot of workers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, and also, I mean, like for her case, actually, she had very little time to prove herself, because it was like some 3 months, and then it was during the holiday season.
Yeah.
And not many people are kind of ready to make sales decisions.
Yeah.
And we're at a time in history where people are just not spending, like businesses
they're
not looking to, they're not increasing their sales budget. So there are a lot of factors in play as to, you know, why the situation turned out the way it was. But that was one observation. The second thing was the, you know, just linking back to the toxicism and the amount of stress one is willing to take. Because, you know, when you're Gen Z, that's like formative years of your career.
Right.
You're looking to start building up your financial assets, for example. And there's always, then there's this balance of like, how much am I willing to take the stresses at work versus like what I cannot take?
Well, is it so much of the stresses, or something has happened to the corporate world that has become so tight that it's simply impossible to maintain your mental wellness and be productive at the same time? I really don't know. I haven't been working for a decade, right? Now, but what I do know is that there are some jobs, in fact, a majority of jobs in the modern world are bullshit jobs, right? And bullshit jobs is not something that I've coined. It's coined by anthropologist David Graeber, right? And there are jobs like, if you're flunky, that means you're a person that is attached to a team, because the person who manages you can be a manager because you make the hit count, right? And there is the,
what are the defining features of a bullshit job?
There are five of them. So there's a flunky, there's a goon. There is a duct taper. A duct taper is like an IT professional that reboots a server but doesn't really get into the root cause of the problem. I was very much a duct taper. And the fourth is a box ticker. A box ticker doesn't add any value to the value chain. They're just like auditors. They do this checkbox. And they're currently being destroyed, right, by automation, RPA, and all these various tools. And finally, the taskmaster. The taskmaster manages the four people who have bullshit jobs, right? And it's such a clear methodology, right, to understand this. And I don't understand why we don't teach this in our school system. And if people are aware, and I think the most important thing is to be aware that you yourself, you're doing a bullshit job. Yeah. And for so many years, I was just doing it. I was aware of it. And then I decided to use financial independence as a way to just get out of it, right? Yeah. Because if my work is bullshit, there'll be one day where I won't be required by the companies anymore. Right? So if you understand this framework and you know that tech companies have overhired, then it's just a concentration of bullshit jobs in these organizations. They have to go. Eventually, they have to go. Right? But what kind of job does that lady hold? My guess is that she's a good because she's in business development and marketing. Yeah.
So then it's the takeaway there to avoid bullshit jobs as you define
it. Very hard.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Because there's also aspects of your job that not particularly value-adding, but right now you still need to do it. It doesn't constitute the whole of your job, but it's still something that needs to be done.
I will tell you that I'm very sure you don't have a bullshit job because you run a company and you run a startup. You basically do everything, right? So if you are someone who's an entrepreneur and you have P&L responsibility, it's definitely not a bullshit job because you're trying to create a product and you're desperately trying to get investment funding. You're trying to launch it, right? But not everybody can do this. I can't do this. That's why I became an investor.
So then the distinction is you want to avoid being a cost center in a company.
Yes, a cost center has a very high risk of being one of the five categories I speak of. I would say the probability is 100%. Okay, if you are an R&D engineer, you're probably not doing a bullshit job because you're creating something new, right? With whatever you know, right? If you're a regular kind of engineer, you need to be very, very concerned. If you are a duct taper, that means when something breaks, you fix it, but the thing continues to break in the future. Yeah, these jobs are very dangerous, you know? And one day you might not be required. They find someone from China or India who will continue to do the duct taping. Yeah, so if engineers are not safe, you know, and I don't think anybody who studied anything else is safe in the corporate world. I guess your only consolation is that maybe the extent of how much bullshit I do in my day job is low. Like, for example, 25% of my work is box ticking. You know, that's still fine. So I think that's something we need to be aware of. And but David Graeber is not popular because he's known as an anarchist, I think. So his ideas are obviously not supported by the status quo and the mainstream. But I never understood why, because I think he can improve the productivity of any unit that you see. You know, if as a manager, you understand that I'm just a taskmaster, I'm managing a team of goons. You know, what can I do? You know,
to add value. It takes self-awareness to know that, right? Because there could be that tendency where I think everybody would feel that my role here is essential.
Yeah, I guess that's the difference between a person like me who pursues financial independence above every other priority when I was working. I've never had that idea that my role is essential because I was an IT outsourcing professional. I have colleagues who committed suicide when their jobs and their contracts ended. So I've seen the kind of devastation to entire IT departments. A whole room full of solution architects disappeared from Alexandra Building. Yeah, I've seen situations like this. So we don't have that. At least for my generation, I've never believed that the work was essential. The idea was, I'm not too far away from career death. It's a question of when it will happen, you know? Yeah.
I guess, you know, one takeaway from that is the attachment, or how much, you know, how much do we ascribe our sense of self-worth to just our careers alone?
Yeah.
Because if somebody could feel depressed enough, where when their contract drops ended and then they feel that need to kill themselves. I mean, that's you know, that's linking to mental wellness, right?
This is one of my big regrets in life. I have invested a full amount of my identity into my work in my younger days. And it was actually totally unnecessary. And I was just lucky because when I became financially dependent, I went through a period where I didn't have a work identity and I was unhappy, but I wasn't close to depressed because, you know, I wasn't starving and my family was well taken care of, right? For the older guys in my generation, I have some friends who've just lost their jobs maybe 2 to 3 months ago. The devastation is horrible. Unless they can find another job, which is very hard, there is really no way for you to get out of it. So you might as well, you should have put in some effort to find a way to sort of move your idea that you are such and such a person holding on to such and such a role, because it's very, very transient. It's very, very transient. It's not something that you want to be attached to.
So that's, you know, advocating the importance of moving towards financial independence.
Yeah, that's always been my message when I show up on the podcast. It's not something for everybody, but at least I try to paint the context for work and for the people listening in. Yeah, maybe you should try to have a conversation with people in their 40s and 50s and talk to them about some of their work, kind of workplace regrets. And if you're lucky enough, you find that the person who's in his 40s or 50s might not talk down to you because you're Gen Z. We might actually envy you because you have that kind of activism and you can fight back and you can use social media to bring these companies to their knees. That's not a bad thing. And,
and some
of us might even benefit from it.
Yeah, I think probably more open conversations about how to act in the workplace, more open conversations about how to work towards financial independence. But on that part, you know, for people who are looking to work towards financial independence and want to talk to you, where can they find you?
Okay, Google ERMINTRO, ERM intro. All right, take the first link and you see me and my preview, my free preview on my early retirement masterclass. And we'll talk about my life story and my journey there.
Cool.
All right.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Many thanks as well to all of you out there for tuning in. This has been a fantastic conversation, and we would definitely love to hear what you think about it. If you would like to get in touch with us, you can reach out to us through the email podcasts@melisten.sg or at my Instagram at misfitfi. Aside from that, if you enjoy what you're listening to and want to hear more, please help to spread and grow the show by subscribing on MeListen or Apple Podcasts, or by following on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Finally, the Building Financial Fitness podcast is an original production from MediaCorp and recorded at Scape Live Studios, The Pod, powered by Audio Technica and City Music. Episode production is done by Junas Yu, with editing and support by Danny Cordy and Gareth Fernandez. Once again, I'm your host and BFF, Junas Yu. Until the next time.